The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Stephen Orhouse Media.
A quick warning before we begin. This episode will contain the names of people and places that are entirely fictional, which I'm sure to mispronounce often. I hope you'll find it in your heart to forgive me. Enjoy the show.
Between the years when the oceans drank Atlantis and the rise of the sons of Arius, there was an age undreamed of, when shining kingdoms lay spread across the world. Hither came Conan, the Cimmerian, sword in hand. It is I, his chronicler, who knows well his saga. Now let me tell you of the days of high adventure.
Welcome to another episode of Hither Came Conan, the podcast that wears little fur trunks while it sleeps. It also keeps a massively heavy double-bladed battle axe under its pillow. It finds the trunks more than a little constricting, and as you might imagine, sleeping atop a great big axe is far from comfortable. So yeah, the podcast doesn't get a lot of sleep, and as a result, it's often a bit cranky. So step lightly, okay? I'm your host. My name is Steven, and I'm recording today's episode with tears in my eyes because I am sad to announce that this is the last of the Dark Horse books we're going to be looking at for a great long while. That is until we get to Conan the Barbarian number 30 from Marvel Comics. Published in June of 1973, it adapts The Hand of Nergal, an unfinished Robert E. Howard Conan tale that was also adapted in Conan issues 47 through 50 from Dark Horse Comics back in December of 2007 to May of 2008. So yeah, for you Dark Horse fans, that's a little something to look forward to. And it's only, what, 6, maybe 8 weeks away? Until then, today we're looking at Conan number 7 from Dark Horse Comics. This issue hit the stands on Wednesday, August the 25th, 2004. It sports a cover price of $2.99, and it is entitled Blood for Blood. It was written by Kurt Busiek with art by Kerry Nord and Thomas Yates, letters by Richard Starkings and Comicraft, and the colors were by Dave Stewart.
Into the boat!
Previously in Conan number 6. Conan's slave revolt fails, and the young barbarian can do nothing but stand by and watch as Iosmini, along with Njord and his warriors, walk off the bridge to nowhere and die in the bottomless chasm below. Conan climbs down and finds that there is a bottom of the chasm after all, and at the bottom he finds the bodies of his friends. After giving them an honorable send-off, Conan climbs out of the chasm to search for the two men behind it all. The two men who got Conan and his friends captured and enslaved by the Hyperboreans. The two men who, when Conan finds them, must pay. As issue 7 opens, Conan treks through the Arctic wasteland below Hyperborea, traveling south to Brithunia. There is no food but plenty of water.
We ate sand.
We ate what?
We ate sand.
He ate sand.
He's also able to find bits of wood for the fire that keeps him warm at night. It's Conan's memories, however, that keeps him going, keeps him moving south. He thinks of Iosmini and of Njord. The Cimmerian blames himself for their deaths, and so it is for them he survives and strives to stay alive.
Staying alive, staying alive.
His thoughts also stray to those of two men, the Asgardians Sajarl and Einar. Conan recalls the attack of the giant Hyperborean Gernike soldiers following the Asgardian victory over the Vanarmen Raiders. The Cimmerian also recalls how in that moment of need, the Vanarmen took up arms and aided Conan and the men of Asgard against the great Hyperborean giants. But most of all, he remembers Sajarl and Einar watching the battle from atop a great mound of rock, and how, when Conan climbed up to them and called for their aid in a plan that would allow for both the Asgardians and the Vanarmen a chance at escape, Sajarl kicked Conan from the rocky outcropping, showing both himself and Einar as the cowards they were.
Well, sir, you are a cowardly son of a bitch.
Back in the present, Conan stumbles into a tiny border village in the north of Brithunia, and using trinkets of gold taken from the Hyperborean corpses at the bottom of the chasm, the Cimmerian is able to purchase food, drink, and a room. He stays only long enough to shave and learn where Sajarl and Einar might be. He follows rumors of the two Iser, one fox-faced and crafty, the other large and bald.
He's large.
Moving deeper into southern Brithunia until, in the fifth village, Conan finds them both. Approaching Sajarl on one of the village streets, Conan cuts him down, killing the man as the villagers watch in surprise and fear. Then, spying Einar and the crowd of onlookers, Conan chases after him. As Einar manages to make it just beyond the village, he stumbles and falls onto his back. Conan is on him in a blink. He knocks the sword from Einar's hand, and with his own sword held high, the Cimmerian stands over the prone and defenseless man of Asgard, who begins to beg for his life. He tells Conan that it was all Sajarl, that he had nothing to do with the Hyperboreans. Sajarl had been the one to make the arrangements for Conan's abduction, but that the abduction was supposed to have happened later on down the road after Conan had left the men of Asgard. But the Hyperboreans had changed the plan and they had attacked early. They were only supposed to take the Cimmerian, but they took Njord and the others as well. Conan is taken aback by this news. He had come to kill Sajarl and Einar for abandoning them, for running like cowards when they could have helped them all escape. He had no idea that Sajarl and Einar were hands-on responsible, that they hadn't just refused to help. They had actually handed Conan and the others over to the Hyperboreans. And so, upon hearing this newest information, the young barbarian kills Einar by shoving his sword down the man's throat.
Wow, that was kind of brutal.
Later that night, after having a drink or two at the village tavern, after refusing the advances of a prostitute, and after spending most of the rest of his coin on provisions, Conan packs up and heads west to Nemedia. Meanwhile, on the previous night, far to the south and west, in the mountain-ringed Aquilonian province of Poitain, an assassin named Janissa, she who is called the Widowmaker, breaks into the villa of a wealthy merchant and kills him for someone called the Bone Woman. And as the issue ends, with the merchant dead and her contract complete, Janissa suddenly hears the voice of the Bone Woman in her head, who tells the assassin that she's needed elsewhere, that she's needed in Nemedia. Oh, goodness. There you go, folks. The ultimate end to the Cimmerian's first Dark Horse arc. It's a tale of friendship, of love, of failure, loss, and hollow revenge. But let's get into all that a bit deeper in Steven's favorite bits. All right. So once again, we will start with the cover. This is another Joseph Michael Linzer cover. It's a bit generic, and because they're trying to show a sense of movement, it's also a bit blurry. I actually quite like it, but it's one of those covers that they make and then file away to use if necessary, because it's going to go with any story. But yeah, I still rather like it. It's a really nice looking cover. It's got this red background. There's this whole swirly thing happening around Conan with Conan's face in the center. And again, it's there to show movement. And so the whole swirly thing, everything outside of Conan's face is blurred and it gets blurrier the closer to the edge of the cover you get. But within this whole swirly whirlwind tornado thing that's going on around Conan, there's drops of blood just twisting in this twister-like shape. It's like Conan is fighting so hard and so fast, and he's moving in such a fashion that he's created a freaking tornado around himself, and the blood of everyone that he's killing is just making up this tornado around him, a tornado of blood. And again, yeah, while it is a bit generic, I guess you could take it for Conan exacting his revenge upon Sajarl and Einar in such a violent fashion that it creates a blood tornado. It's actually pretty cool. I really like it. The issue opens with Conan trekking through the icy wilderness. The very first page is a splash page and the title page where it says blood for blood. It's mostly landscape and it's mostly white. It's just this white, blue, there's some green in there, this Arctic wilderness of icy rocks and big mounds of snow. And Conan is just a very small, basic looking figure trekking through all of it. He looks like he's in the middle of nowhere because he's in the middle of nowhere. The crazy thing, however, is that while he has this cape that he was able to get off of one of the corpses at the bottom of the chasm, he doesn't have any pants on that I can tell. He's got what appears to be little fur trunks, and then he's got these sandal boots type things that he's wearing on his feet. They look like sandals that have the straps that wrap around his feet, around his ankle, and then up to his calf. But there's fabric between those straps as well. So yeah, those boots or sandals or whatever you want to call them, his fur trunks, his sleeveless shirt with the breastplate and the metal helmet along with the cape, those are his only protection from the elements, which is ice and snow and below freezing temperatures. But Conan manages to push on. And there's a great panel on page three, the very last panel of page three, where he seems to have dug out a little bit of shelter with a wall of snow at his back. And he's got a fire going and he's got his cape wrapped around him. And you can tell he is freaking freezing. He is cold. But his thoughts dwell on Eosmini as well as Njord, as well as Sajarl and Einar, and that's what keeps him going. Eventually, he makes it to this Brythunian village. He doesn't speak their language. They don't speak his language. They can tell he's speaking Iser, but they know that he's not one of them because it's one of these guys says it's a really weird accent. Plus, Conan is not blonde, and all of the people of Asgard appear to be blonde. But there's actually a panel I forgot to point out before we get to this village in Brythunia. It's the last panel on page four. He's trekking through the snow again. He's thinking of Njord on this page. He's thinking of, you know, Sajarl and Einar. These memories are running through his head. And then at the bottom on that last panel, just the look on his face. It's a profile shot. He's wrapping his cape around him very tightly against the elements. He looks very disheveled. He's, of course, unshaven. And he looks almost haunted. It's a great, great panel. But when he gets to this village, he's able to spend some of this gold that he found at the bottom of the chasm. He's able to eat. He's able to drink. He's able to rest. He's able to shave. And then he moves on. He could stay and regain all of his strength. He has enough gold to do that, but he is a man on a mission, and so he moves on, and he's following these rumors of these two men of Asgard based on their descriptions, and he's going from village to village until he gets to village number five that he finally runs into Sajarl. The only word he says to Sajarl is his name. Sajarl is either coming out of or going into a building. It might be where he is staying. It might be a tavern, but Conan just shouts out his name. Sajarl turns around. He's very surprised to see Conan. And then he holds a hand out to Conan, you know, offers his hand for a shake. But then you can clearly see behind his back, he's holding a great big dagger. And he's acting all like, hey, Conan, oh my God, it's so good to see you. I mean, I thought you were dead, man. Oh, what a terrible time it was back there. I'm so glad that you're alive. Oh, did Njord and the others, are they okay too? Woo, man, I'm glad I got away. I thought you guys had gotten away too, but then I didn't see you. And then Conan just shoves his sword right through Sajarl's middle with a loud, nyah! He yells. It's a splash page, and he plunges that sword into Sajarl so violently and with such strength that Sajarl is lifted from the ground. And then as he's lying there on the ground dying, Conan kind of lays into him.
Your brothers are dead, Sajarl, betrayed by two who turned tail and fled when they were needed, dead like you.
And that's when he notices that this crowd has formed. All these people are like, oh my God, did you just see what happened? He just killed that man. He just walked right up to him and killed him. And that's when Conan notices in the crowd is Einar, who looks pretty freaking scared. I mean, wouldn't you be scared at this point?
I'm terrified.
And Conan shouts out Einar's name and gives chase. And then we get to these two pages that are probably it's my favorite bit of the whole issue. Conan catches up to Einar on the outskirts of the village. Einar has tripped and he's fallen and he's lying on his back.
I've fallen and I can't get up.
Conan knocks the sword out of his hand and Einar is like pleading for his life. And Einar really, he's telling Conan the truth. He didn't do this. It was Sajarl. But of course, Einar went right along with it. If he was a man of honor, he would have put a stop to it. But this is the first time that Conan realizes that it was Sajarl and Einar who actually brought the Hyperboreans down upon Conan and all their Icer friends. Up to this point, it was just, you know, these two guys ran away when the Hyperboreans attacked. I tried to get them to help with a plan that could have meant the escape of the Asgardians and the Vannermen, but these guys just kicked me aside and ran away. So as far as Conan is concerned, up to this point, he blames Sajarl and Einar for running away, for being cowards, and thinking that had Sajarl and Einar stayed and helped Conan with this plan, that maybe everybody could have escaped. And so because of that, he blames Sajarl and Einar for Conan and Njord being enslaved. But he finds out here that it's more than just they refused to help, and therefore, instead of escaping, they were captured. He finds out that they're the ones who brought the Hyperboreans down upon them in the first place. Granted, the plan was that Conan, when he left the men of Asgard, which he was going to be doing in the next day or so, because his part of helping Njord and his warriors, his part of it was done. They'd found the Vannerman raiders. They had captured them all. And so Conan was going to get back to his original journey, which was to go to Hyperborea. And so Sajarl's plan was just, we'll tell them that Conan is coming and then they can grab him up and he can be enslaved. But the Hyperboreans ended up attacking early and taking Conan and Njord and all these other warriors. But Conan is so, I mean, there's a panel on these two pages where it's just Conan's face and he is in shock. And then the very next panel is him holding his sword up over his head, holding it with both hands upside down so that he's like plunging with a downward motion with this sword. And then the very next panel is Einar lying atop this rocky bit of ground, I guess, and his back is arched. And the sword has just been plunged into his mouth, down his throat, and must be going into the rocks themselves. Conan must have used so much force that Einar's dead body is now pinned to the rocks, because there's at least three quarters of that sword, or maybe half of the sword, that's within those rocks. And that's pretty horrifying. Conan was not messing around here. This is what happens when you piss off a 16-year-old Sumerian who basically has the body of an adult. You know, this is why you don't mess with the Sumerians. But there's this part where this guy from the village, he's the magistrate. It's really weird. It's kind of a weird part because the guy comes up and he's like, hey, you can't be doing that. These men were guests of mine. You can't just be up here killing people. And Conan gets in his face.
These men were cowards and traitors who sold their own people into slavery and death. They deserve their deaths, and any who stand with them deserve death as well. Now, I speak little Brethunian. What did you say?
So he didn't understand what the guy said. The guy, I guess, doesn't understand what Conan's saying. But the dude also just watched Conan plunge a sword into another guy and into the rocks below the dude. Conan's obviously very angry. He's all up in this magistrate's face. So the magistrate's like, hey, it doesn't matter what you did. I'm sure they deserved it. Hey, why don't you come down to the village and I'll buy you a drink. Hither Came Conan will return after these messages.
Superman Radio Revisited. Hosted by Matthew T. Cody. This is going to be a new podcast which will be exploring the Superman radio show of the 1940s. It will begin by playing an episode.
Unfiltered. Unedited. Uncensored. Uncut.
Followed by my commentary. We're going to talk about the era a little bit. And any interesting things that crop up in the episodes. I think it'll be a lot of fun. And I'm hoping to make it an interactive show. So come along. It's going to be a great time.
And now back to Hither Came Conan. And then we get to this bit in the issue where Conan is in the village. He's taken off his armor. He's just sitting in this tavern. He's got one empty mug of ale next to him, and he's drinking another mug. And he just looks sad. You know, a prostitute comes up, and she's like, hey, you need some company there, big guy? And he tells her to leave him alone.
Mind your own business!
And he realizes at this point that being who he is, while he didn't really have a lot of choice in what he did with Sajarl and Einar, it's like he felt like he had to do that. It really didn't bring him anything in the way of happiness or contentment. Iasmini's still dead. Njord and his men are still dead. Conan can, you know, he still has these memories of old Gorm dead on the slab, his body being turned into a energy basically for keeping the Hyperboreans alive. He can remember, you know, he still has these memories of these weird spider-like creatures at the bottom of the chasm, eating the bodies of Njord's men. And he just doesn't feel good. He doesn't feel good about the whole thing at all. He did what he had to do by hunting down Sajarl and Einar. He probably feels that there was some justice done by killing them, but it didn't do anything for him. He's still plagued with these memories. He's still plagued with the guilt. It appears that he's trying to drink away some of this depression, which isn't going to work. And eventually, it's either the next morning or a number of mornings later, he has spent most of his money on new clothes and provisions. He actually is wearing pants and sleeves. And he's just going to head back out and start wandering the earth. And the prostitute who had propositioned him earlier, she sees him outside getting ready to leave, and she asks him where he's going. And he just says, I don't know, what lies that way? And he points west. It's like, what's west beyond those hills? And she says, Nemedia. And he says, and I guess I'm going to Nemedia. The prostitute then tells Conan that the two men that he killed had some gold, some coin that the innkeeper was holding for them, that Sajarl and Einar had paid the innkeeper for a longer stay than they ended up staying because Conan cut their stay short.
Well, that's one way of putting it.
And she tells Conan that the innkeeper is hoping that Conan doesn't realize this because the guy wants to keep that money. And Conan just says, you know what? I don't want it. I don't want that money. it's blood money, and he just doesn't want to touch it. And so she asks, all right, well, what do you want us to do with the bodies? And he tells her to bury them deep in the cold earth. And that's really pretty hardcore, because we have to remember that Sajarl and Einar are from Asgard, and they believe that the only way that they can reach their heaven is by having their bodies burned so that their souls can travel through the smoke that rises into the air. And then their souls traveling the smoke will rise along with the smoke. And that's what takes them to the halls of the dead. And it's just a horrifying thought for an Iser man to be buried in the ground. It's a horribly evil thing to do to a man of Asgard. And that's Conan's, I guess, final revenge, making sure that they are buried deep into the ground, and so that their souls will never reach Valhalla. I think it's Valhalla. I think the halls of their dead is Valhalla. But
from Lapse of the Four Winds.
That wraps up the first arc. We still have 8 more pages in this issue, though, and it's kind of a prelude to something that we won't get to for, I think, another 4 issues. But we have this woman who breaks into this villa in this mountain city of Poitain in Aquilonia. She's there to murder a merchant for someone called the Bone Woman. This merchant is waiting for her, and he has surrounded himself with guards. And when she finally makes it into the villa, she finds herself surrounded by a dozen or so of these guards who are holding lamps. You know, suddenly it's in the middle of the night, and suddenly she's bathed in light. It's like spotlights just suddenly flash on. But in this case, they're holding lamps with covers, and they open the cover. Boom, she's flooded in light. And this guy's like, hey, I understand that you're called the Widowmaker and that you're here to kill me for the Bone Woman. But you know what? I'm not going to let that happen, because I'm super cool and I'm super rich and I'm better than everybody. So guards, why don't you kill her? And she then, of course, kills all the guards, kills the guy. There's a really great page here, 4 panels of her just killing guards, just flipping and jumping and kicking. And, you know, she's very acrobatic. She chases the guy into his room and she kills him. And then we get this bit at the very end where she can hear the Bone Woman speaking in her head, telling her that she's needed in the media, which, hey, that's where Conan went. Wonder what that's all about. And again, we're not going to find out for another 4 to 5 issues, but
that seems like quite a coincidence.
It's a nice little bit here at the end, these 8 pages. They were not included in the collection that collects this first arc, at least the trade paperback collection, which makes sense. You know, it's referencing or preluding a story that we're not going to get for a number of issues. And so in order to keep this first arc just the story itself as one thing, basically, they only included the first 14 pages of the issue in the collection. But yeah, there you are, folks. Those were my favorite bits. But since we're done with Dark Horse for the time being, which, yeah, I guess I hadn't announced that yet, so that bit there at the beginning of the episode that might have, I don't know, threw you through a loop, because I know the last 2 episodes I mentioned that we would be talking about this issue and issue 8, but yeah, we're not going to talk about issue 8. And I did mention it on a post over at the Super Secret Steven Society, and it's a post that is available to everyone, not just paid members. And yeah, that makes me feel I got to talk about that real quick. So let me talk about that, and then we'll get into my final thoughts. So I try to do this thing once a week over on the Super Secret Steven Society. It's a post or a weekly post called Stuff Done and Stuff to Do. And it's a weekly update on whatever it is that I'm doing. And I actually post an image of my to-do list for the week. I bullet point all the updates that I have to update since the last post. I go a bit deeper into each of those bullet pointed updates. And then I often list out the most current podcast release schedule for the week. And it's something that's available to all members, paid or otherwise, because if I haven't mentioned this yet, there is a free membership option for the Super Secret Steven Society. The free option is not going to get you episodes early and ad-free like the paid option, which you just need to commit to $1 a month to get that benefit. But it does get you access to these update posts, which are also sent to your email address when they go live. So if you don't want to make a monthly payment, but you do want to be a member, I mean, that's cool. Just join for free. And that way you can get those updates once a week or however often I can put them up. You can join now using the link in the show notes or just go to secretsociety.hithercameconan.com. Until then, yeah, we're not going to be talking about issue number 8 on the show. I mean, I gave it a read and I really enjoyed it, but I don't know. I think at this point, issue 7 wraps up this current arc in such a satisfying fashion that there's really no need to go any further into the Dark Horse run. Not now, anyways, because to be honest with you, I am so ready to get back into the Marvel run from the 70s. We will get back to some more Dark Horse comics eventually, just not now. Now, saying that, while we will be getting back into the Marvel Conan the Barbarian issues from the 70s for, I don't know, a couple dozen episodes, we'll also be sprinkling in those issues once a month from the Titan run. But to get back to the subject of today's episode, I do have some final thoughts on this first Dark Horse arc as a whole, which, to put it simply, it was a near perfect story. In fact, if somebody was to approach me and say, "Hey, Steven, I've not read any Conan comics before, but I'd like to give them a try. Where's a good place to start?" Well, I think I'd point them to this first Dark Horse arc every single time. Of course, it would be easier for them to get their hands on the current Titan books, especially the digital versions through places like Comixology. And the Titan issues are certainly issues I would point out to someone looking to try out Conan. But if they're able to get their hands on the first 7 issues of the Dark Horse run, then honestly, that's where I would have them start, because it really is just that good. It's got amazing art. It's a compelling story. It has it all. But before I bring this episode to an end, since we won't be talking about the Dark Horse comics specifically for a while, I mean, when we get into the occasional Marvel issue that is adapting a Robert E. Howard Conan story that's also been adapted by Dark Horse, we'll talk about those. But when it comes to specifically looking at individual issues of the Dark Horse run, as we've been doing with these 7 issues, we're not going to be doing that for a while. So I wanted to use this episode to talk a bit about the first few Dark Horse collections, primarily the trade paperbacks, because I find the way that these trade paperbacks were published and what they contained, I find it all a bit batty. Before we get started, however, just know that I may get some, possibly even most of this information wrong, or I might not. I probably won't. It's just always a big worry of mine. I got all of the info from just 2 sources: Mike's Amazing World of Comics at mikesamazingworld.com and the official Dark Horse site at darkhorse.com. But first up in the Dark Horse Conan trade paperback series was Conan Volume 1, The Frost Giant's Daughter and Other Stories. This was published in March of 2005, and it collected issues 0 through 6 and 14 pages of issue number 7. Next comes Conan Volume 2, The God in the Bowl and Other Stories. This was published in October of 2005, and this volume collected the last 8 pages of issue number 7, along with issues 9 through 14. After that comes Conan Volume 3, The Tower of the Elephant and Other Stories. This is from June of 2006, and it collects issues 16, 17, and issues 19 through 22. Following Volume 3 comes Conan Volume 4, The Hall of the Dead, from June of 2007, and that collects issues 24, 25, 29 through 31, 33, and 34. After Volume 4 comes an unnumbered collection called Conan, The Bloodstained Crown and Other Stories. That was published in January of 2008. And this volume collects issues 18, 26 through 28, and issue 39. Then they published Conan Volume 5, Rogues in the House. This was in March of 2008, and it collects issues 37, 38, and 41 through 44. There are more examples, of course, but yeah, throughout these first six volumes, there are a number of issues missing. So the question is, where are they? Where are those missing issues? Where are they collected? And that answer brings us to Conan Volume Zero, Born on the Battlefield, which was published in June of 2008. This volume collects issue 8 from September of 2004, issue 15 from April 2005, issue 23 from December 2005, issue 32 from September of 2006, and issues 45 and 46 from October and November of 2007. And yet, by this point, we are still missing issues 35, 36, and issue 40. And they won't be collected until Conan, the Spear, and Other Stories in June of 2010. So here's the thing. I like the idea that if you're reading the collections in order of publication, you're getting all of the main story arcs told in a, I don't know, somewhat chronological fashion, I would assume. Remember that I haven't actually read past issue 11, so whether they are chronological as far as Conan's life, I don't know. I'm just assuming. However, that being said, at the time that these comics were being published, if myself, for example, if I was, a wait for the trade type of reader, I'd have been more than a little angry when once I got to volume 2, I discovered that issue number 8 wasn't included. Then I would get volume 3 and it's missing issues 15 and 18. Volume 4 is missing issues 22, 26 through 28, and 32. And I could go on and on and on, but you get the idea. I just find it curious that these Conan issues were collected in such a fashion. And you know what? I would be super interested in hearing from anyone who were collecting these issues and or the trades at the time. I'd love to know how you felt when you discovered missing issues in the trades. I mean, did it piss you off when you got to volume 2 and realized, wait a minute, where's frickin' issue 8? You know, were you even more angry when you got to volume 3 and you're like, well, hold on, this doesn't have issues 15 or 18. What the flip is going on? Or were you confident that eventually these issues would show up in a future collection? I'd really like to know. Feedback at hithercameconan.com. Fill me in, folks, because I find the whole thing confusing and interesting. And I'd just like to know what the thought process was at the time. Other than, you know, all these issues that are not showing up in these collections don't really add to the story that's being told in the collections. But were they telling folks that, yeah, volume 2 doesn't have issue 8, but don't worry, it'll show up in a future collection. Yeah, volume 4 is missing issues 23, 26, 27, 28, and 32, but don't worry, they'll show up in another collection. You know, I'd just be really interested to know.
I got to know!
Until then, that's it. That's all I got, folks. I have nothing left to say about Conan number 7 from Dark Horse Comics.
Everybody out!
Next week, we're jumping back into the Marvel Comics run with Conan the Barbarian number 25 from December of 1973, and it's called The Mirrors of Karamakod. And I don't know about you, but I'm pretty goddamn excited about it. Don't get me wrong, there is a special place in my heart for these Dark Horse books. For me, because they were the first Conan comics I picked up on a regular basis, even if it was just for a few months, they will forever be considered my first true exposure to Conan of Cimmeria in comic book form. That is despite the fact that I would read the occasional 80s Marvel Conan comic, but that was more random and sporadic based off of what my older brother may have picked up, you know, here and there. Regardless, I am so ready to get back to some 70s Conan. And what's got me even more pumped is that issue number 25 kicks off John Buscema's, what, 14-year run on the title? I mean, I'm sure I've said it many times on the podcast, but when I would read these random Conan comics in the 80s, you know, here and there, they would be issues penciled by John Buscema, which imprinted itself on my heart as the look for Conan in comics. So, yeah, I am so looking forward to it, and I hope you are too. Until then, folks, keep your swords close by, never stop treading them jeweled thrones, and most importantly, be nice to each other. Bye. I want to thank you for listening to this episode of Hither Came Conan. Questions and comments can be directed to feedback@hithercameconan.com or come join us on social media. Just look for @ConanPodcast on Twitter and Blue Sky and @HitherCameConan on Instagram, Threads, and Facebook. If you enjoyed today's episode, please rate the show over at Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening. Donations to the show can be made at donate.hithercameconan.com or become a member of the Super Secret Steven Society and get episodes early and ad-free. Join now using the link in the show notes or go to secretsociety.hithercameconan.com. Memberships start at just $1 a month.
Many wars and feuds did Conan fight. Honor and fear were heaped upon his name. In time, he became a king by his own hand. This story shall also be told.
As issue 7 opens, Conan treks through the Arctic wasteland south of Hyperborea, traveling south to Brythunia. As issue 7 opens, Conan treks through the Arctic wasteland below But most of all, he remembers Sajarl and Einar watching the battle from atop a great fucking piece of shit and using trinkets of
I just don't think I can move through life knowing that a guy named Steven did this to me.
How could you let this happen, Steven?
Your podcast sucks.
Enough talk.